That'll call the court to order. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals oral arguments this morning, May 18th, 2023. We have two cases on the court's calendar for arguments on the Zoom platform. The rules are the same. Each side will have 15 minutes to present argument. A respondent or appellant will have 5 minutes of rebuttal time. There is a timekeeping mechanism up in the left-hand corner of the screen. Please be mindful of the time remaining. Please also pay attention to any cues from the judges indicating they might have questions for you so we can have our questions answered today. Finally, the attorneys should be sure to state their names before each portion of their argument so we have a record of the recording and know who is speaking when we go back to listen to this. With that, we are ready for arguments from counsel for appellant. And who is going first, mother's lawyer or dad's lawyer?
Dad's lawyer. That would be me, Your Honors.
And could you identify yourself for the record?
Yes. Erica Ossett on behalf of the father, John Daly.
All right. And this is in the matter of the welfare of the children or of the child of DRL and JLD, case number A221815. You may proceed with your argument.
Thank you. So, Your Honors, to me, in reviewing this case, I think two issues stand out to me. One is the failure of the county to make and provide reasonable efforts to father despite his incarceration. I think the statute is clear that the social worker, the county, the agency shall provide a case plan, shall do that in conjunction with the parents, and shall explain that to the parent. That was never done. Those facts are undisputed. Father has been incarcerated, yes, but he has always expressed an interest and has shown a connection to his son, Blake. That is also undisputed. In fact, as I stated in my brief, virtually every single person that testified, Your Honors, in that case talked about the fact that they wanted father to have continued contact along with mother. Again, undisputed. And I will note the cases that I cited in regards to the reasonable efforts are important here. And I would ask the Your Honors to look at the contrast between what was provided to mother versus what was provided to father. The social worker, guardian ad litem, went above and beyond to try to reunify mom with Blake,
counsel,
with their son.
This is Judge Larkin, and I apologize. Yes. I don't know why I'm not displayed on the screen. It says my video is running, but for some reason that is not working.
Sure.
The response I have to your argument is, well, isn't that the natural consequence of the fact that mother was out of custody and dad was in prison? And absolutely, he's entitled to a case plan. Were they not doing all that they could for him, given his custodial status? What more should the county have done that would have enabled reunification?
Thank you. Yes. No, they were not. And in fact, the social worker testified that she wasn't even going to do a case plan. She dropped off a document that said, well, do this, this, and this, never explained it, never went over that with father, dropped off a document, and then filed a case plan without ever going over that with father 30 days after the statutory time frame. So 61 days. They are required
And not meaning to make light of those shortcomings, but sure. My understanding from the record is that father was doing some of the things on his case plan on his own. So I'm looking for the harm that comes from the county's failure to provide the written case plan within 30 days. If in fact, father, to his credit, took it upon himself to do the very thing set forth in the case plan with the available services.
Sure. Thank you. And what I would say as what was required of father was in particular for him to do individual counseling. Now, that was never explained to Father, and had that been explained, he would have continued to do that. He had several sessions, but he didn't know that that was required of him. In addition, the county's own case plan talked about revisiting the issue of contact. And by their own case plan, it said that the social worker shall revisit that issue. And that was never done. It was never talked about with Father, despite his repeated requests for contact. Had that been talked about, had that been gone over with Father, they would have had some type of contact. And so that is the harm. There was no visitation, not even telephone contact or letter contact. He understands that there wasn't going to be any type of in-person visits, but they could have resumed those some type of contact. And I will note that the two Zoom visits that he had that were supposedly troubling for the county, those occurred after or before, excuse me, before the case plan was developed. And in that case plan, they talked about specifically revisiting that issue, and that was never done. Had the county actually talked through that with Father, there would have been some contact. At least I would hope for that. So
was individual counseling available to Father?
It was, yes.
Okay. So your argument is, if that had been provided, Father might have done a better job in the visits that were occurring, which might have increased contact and led to a better relationship.
Absolutely. And not only that, the social worker, when she called down there, she never even bothered to find out what Father was doing. She talked to him, yes, but she didn't check on any of the programs that were available. There were many programs available. She never contact or asked the case manager to find out what would fit according to that case plan. She just said, yep, okay, good, he's doing this. And the trial record shows that she had no idea what he was doing at that time.
Counsel, this is Judge Brian. If I can jump in, isn't it correct that the district court relieve the county of its duty to provide reasonable efforts prior to trial?
Yes, prior to trial, but not throughout the case. And that was one of the things that in the case law regarding incarcerated parents, that was never done in those cases. And it wasn't done in this case until right before trial, a few months before trial. They never asked for that throughout the proceedings.
It seems like that's the decision that you disagree with here, that there was something incorrect about the analysis or this determination of futility in the decision to relieve the county of reasonable efforts. Is that fair?
I would say that, yes, but not only that, they didn't even try to begin with. They said he's incarcerated and they wrote him off.
Well, I think if I'm not mistaken, there was a draft case plan that was provided to the jail according to the testimony of the social worker. Is that right?
That was not a case plan. No, Your Honor. It was a list of things that the social worker thought he should be doing.
And how different was that list from the case plan requirements?
It was in stark contrast. It was a one-page document that did not talk about contact between between father and son. It was wholly inadequate, Your Honor. And I see that my time is up, so I will turn it over to Ms. Wimmer. Thank you.
I'd like to ask one additional question, just following up on Judge Brian's excellent point.
Sure.
If, in fact, the district court relieved the county of reasonable efforts, regardless of when that occurred, if that decision was not in error, do we even bother to assess the quality of the efforts that were provided?
Absolutely, you should. Because
why though? I mean, if the county was properly relieved of reasonable efforts, how would we then say, well, we're going to reverse because you didn't provide reasonable efforts?
Well, I guess, and maybe I wasn't clear on this, I do not think that the district court should have relieved the county of reasonable efforts because the efforts were inadequate. Thank you.
Thank you. And now we will hear from Mother's attorney again. Please identify yourself before starting your argument.
Thank you. My name is Kimberly Wimmer, and I'm the attorney on behalf of the mother in this case, DRL. And similar to Ms. Osted, I have broken down my time today on the facts that I feel are most important to my client's position in this matter. The first that I would like the court to consider is that what was done by my client during the majority of the time that this case was pending before the Coochin County District Court. And it's my argument that during the majority of that time, my client was doing exactly what she was supposed to be doing in accordance with all parties, and in particular, in accordance with the case plan. There was testimony provided by my client from several different treatment providers. In fact, my client was going above and beyond during the majority of the case in seeking additional treatment help in the form of a DBT program that wasn't even part of the case plan, but she found it to be beneficial. And she was doing that. She started it immediately when the case arose. And I'm going to talk about some timing here in my next point, but she did that throughout the majority of this case.
Counsel, this is Judge Larkin. Can I jump in with a question here?
Yes.
The case law is pretty clear that when reviewing a decision to terminate parental rights or when the district court makes that decision, the focus has to be on the conditions as they exist at the time of trial and whether those conditions, if negative, are likely to continue for an indefinite period. So I think what's most important here is to talk about how was she doing at the time of trial. I know she did a lot of good things in her history with child protection, but I think our focus is likely going to be on how she was doing at the time of trial. So could you address that?
I can. So that actually flows into my next point about timing. Your Honor, there was a period of time that occurred after, and I'm talking about like August of 2022. The trial in this matter was November of 2022. In August of 2022, the court made some decisions that allowed this case to proceed to permanency over my client's objection because of all those good things she had been doing. The court made the decision to relieve the county of reasonable efforts at that time. And at that time, after those rulings were made by the court, my client did have a relapse and had some negative things going on at that time. However, it's my argument as we proceed on the timeline closer to trial, shortly after that, my client did exactly what we would want her to do in that situation. And she reached back out to her treatment providers. She recognized that this was not good. She needed to get back. She needed a higher level of care. And those treatment providers worked with her and found a treatment program that specialized in what she was dealing with specific to mothers of young children. She was able to get into that program. She was doing well in that program. At trial, the treatment counselor, or her, someone familiar with her in that program testified to that. She was receiving over 30 hours a week of programming. I would argue that the evidence supports that if the county would have chosen, the child could have potentially been in that facility with her, as children do that. They attend school and they're part of that program as part of that. My client, I understand the Your Honor's question and timing, and I think that all ties together in timing at the time of the trial, or what she was doing at the time of the trial supports she was doing well and could be a safe caretaker for her child.
How long had she been sober at the time of trial?
She entered the treatment program. The record indicates she entered the treatment program in August of 2022. So she was at least sober for that period of time.
So how much time between then and trial?
I guess I'm not certain, Your Honor. I don't have that date. She did relapse in August, so it would have been after that point for sure.
When was the trial?
The trial was in November of 2022.
Okay, so it's 3 months.
The relapse was in August. She entered the treatment program in October. So as far as a date, I don't know between August and October when the sobriety date would have been.
October to November, she was in treatment. So she had that period, presumably, of documented sobriety.
Yes, Your Honor.
But then the district court has to look at that month in the context of her history and make a decision whether or not she's likely to maintain sobriety going forward.
I understand. And yes, I would argue that the history, the good history leading up to that, supports my client's position that she did have this period of January to August. And it was only, there was a THC relapse in June of 2022, but setting that aside, when she had a real problem was after the district court made its decision to A, proceed to permanency and B, cease reasonable efforts over her objection. I know that that shouldn't be an excuse, but I think the timing is important.
Let me ask this. As a result of the district court's decision to cease reasonable efforts, and when was that decision made? Was that October?
August.
Did the county take away any services that had been available to her prior to that decision?
The county, I would argue the county, although they were supportive of her doing what she was doing in her treatment programs, they didn't deter her from going by any stretch, but they didn't really do anything to facilitate it either. And after the court ceased reasonable efforts, the county, there was generally no communication between my client and the county at that time. There was some testimony at trial that the county takes the position at that time that they don't need to, you know, the court has ordered they don't need to continue working with my client. And there wasn't communication. The county, I don't think, knew what my client was doing at that time. And I would argue even prior to that time, they didn't know what my client was doing because they didn't have communication with those treatment providers from January to August either.
But is there anything you can point to such as, well, if the county had been working with my client, she would have been able to do this or that, and that would have made the difference for her?
I think if the county would have had better communication with both my client and those treatment providers that were supportive of her, they would have understood, had a better understanding of where she was at as far as the successes she was making at the time they asked to move to permanency and at the time they asked to be relieved of reasonable efforts. I don't think we were not on the same page at all, Your Honor, in August of 2022 when the county requested that of the court. And it was my client's argument at that time, continues to be my client's argument, that there were all kinds of good things happening and those weren't being taken into account because there just was no communication between those who were providing the services that were outlined in the case plan. The case plan was very clear what my client was supposed to be doing.
So I understand your argument to be, okay, presumably at trial, the judge was informed of all the good things your client did. And your argument seems to be, well, if the county was better informed of the work she was doing and the positive feedback from her treatment providers, the county may have come in with a different opinion at trial regarding whether or not termination was appropriate.
Yes, Your Honor. That would be accurate. Thank you. I see my time is up. Thank you.
We will now hear from counsel for the county. Please identify yourself for the record.
May it please the court, members of the panel and opposing counsel, my name is Molly French. I'm the assistant Coochaching County attorney on behalf of respondent Coochaching County Public Health and Human Services today. Your Honor, I was also the trial attorney as were Ms. Austin and Ms. Wimmer on this case, so we do have a good handle on the facts and are able to present those to the court today. I'll start with Ms. Austin's argument that the county essentially wrote off father, and I don't think that the record reflects that at all. When this case started, we didn't know father's custodial situation because he was incarcerated, I believe, in Itasca County, and had not yet been sentenced to prison. So he had pending cases in a few different counties. And when Ms. Treat gave him that initial letter, when he was initially in county jail, you know, we didn't know what his availability to parent the child going forward would be. So that's why that letter started off the conversation with him. But we didn't know what the case plan should read, if he was going to be in prison or not. And then when we found out that he had been sentenced to prison and would not be available to parents at all during any likely time period of this case being opened, the case plan was developed in accordance with what he could do in prison.
So let me stop and ask maybe a fact question here, but I also have some additional Well, actually, before I do that, I see Judge Larkin's hand is raised. I'll defer to Judge Larkin if she wants to ask a question at this point. No, it's not raised. Okay. So the fact question that I was wondering about, when you talk about how the case plan was developed, the statute does have some language about how that's supposed to happen. What steps were taken in this case to do that with the input or with the father's help?
Your Honor, just what the record indicates, that the social worker tracked him down. I believe it was Itasca County Jail, gave him that letter while he was in custody, attempted to reach him with difficulty, and then wasn't able to reach him again, I believe. And I don't have the record in front of me right now, but I believe it was when he entered prison.
Did they have any communication prior to what we would say the case plan is developed?
I don't believe there was specific testimony on that. I don't think they did, Your Honor. I think she was able to finally reach him through a gentleman named Keith at the prison, who I think was his case manager. I know there was difficulty from everyone involved in this case to reach
him. Is there testimony that they ever talked directly to each other?
I believe there is. I thought there was communication between the two of them directly, because she had learned from him before talking to the case manager about specifically what he was doing for them in prison.
So maybe I can take a step back then away from the kind of these factual details. If there was a parent who wanted to challenge the determination of futility and wanted to make sure the county was still providing reasonable efforts, how would a parent do that? Is there any case law that allows an appeal or some way to challenge a pretrial determination of the futility of reasonable efforts?
I'm not aware of that, Your Honor. I that's not something that we argued or researched. And it honestly wasn't really an issue. I suppose there could have been a motion for reconsideration on that issue or some requested briefing before the district court.
And what's your understanding of how that decision should be made? There is some case law that suggests there's a prima facie determination of futility, and then at trial, the county still has to prove futility, and the district court judge would still have to make this ultimate determination at trial that its previous decision was supported in some way. But I'm not sure that that's the way that everybody views it and that all the cases are aligned in that way. What's your belief about how the district court is supposed to make this decision? Is it prima facie, and then at trial, there's still some burden on the state to prove something that was done 6 months earlier or 3 months earlier? Or do you take the position that once that decision's made, it's made and the county would no longer be required to continually provide reasonable efforts?
Right. And I am aware that there is, you know, some confusion regarding that issue. I think the court essentially looked at it the way Your Honor explains, because the court made the decision initially of futility, but then at trial, you know, it was still on the table. And it was an issue that reasonable efforts was an issue at trial that was thoroughly hashed out in the court's decision. And the county is in my, you know, experience is never going to pull services or hinder a parent's progress towards, you know, bettering themselves once it's determined initially that reasonable efforts ongoing are futile. You know, so I think practically it is as Your Honor suggested, but I don't think it necessarily legally must be that way. But in this case, I don't think we ever argued that no, this issue is off the table and shouldn't even be presented here.
So, counsel, this is Judge Larkin. Your opinion is that there were reasonable efforts provided despite the district court issuing order relieving you from providing those efforts. Can you answer my question? Were there any services that were discontinued or funding pulled as a result of that decision, or was it merely the level of communication between your client and mother that changed once that decision was made, or your client and father?
Right. I don't believe there was anything that was pulled or taken away from mother or you know, it was essentially a communication issue because of the record does establish that there was quite a long period of time, weeks to a month maybe, that mother was essentially missing and out of town and had no communication with anyone. You know, so we couldn't find her. She didn't respond to anything. We didn't know what she was doing. But there was never a period where if she had come to us during that time, the agency would not have helped her. I think the social worker, Ms. Treat, and mother, you know, when she was doing good initially, had a lot of communication and established a good relationship. You know, nobody's saying that mother didn't have a great bond with the child initially, which is why, you know, we offered compelling reasons to work with her on a CHIPS case and didn't move forward with the bypass case. And that's what differed between mother and father. The bond was there with the child. She had raised him until that time, despite losing a previous child to TPR. And we were familiar with her. We knew her. She knew, you know, it's a small town. Everyone worked together with her great initially. And then, like Your Honor said, I really do think it was more of a communication issue following the finding of futility.
Well, I'd like to go back a little bit, if I can, to sort of the development of the case plan. If I'm reading the district court's order correctly, the district court says the agency failed to follow the mandates regarding timing, did not involve the father in the process, never obtained his signature. What is the remedy, if that's correct, that's what happened here? What would be the remedy or the consequence? And that's separate from were the reasonable efforts provided or was there support for the determination of futility? Is that really the issue on appeal? I'm just asking, what is the consequence of if the district court's correct in characterizing the county's work in this way? What's the consequence of that?
That's a difficult question, Your Honor, because, of course, the best interests of the child are always in the forefront of these cases. But I think Judge Larkin referenced this earlier when she asked about the harm to father, you know, in those technical mistakes. I agree with you that the case plan, when it was finally done, was not signed by father, and that was presented to the court as is. The 61 days, correct, that was too long. But there was so much uncertainty in father's future.
I can see how that would be an argument for reasonableness. If you're saying that there's a harmless error standard that would apply to the statutory requirements, is there a binding authority or some case that you can tell us that would stand for that proposition? I didn't see it in the briefs.
Right. And I haven't come across a case that if one exists, Your Honor. I think this, again, you know, it is like a harmless error standard, and it goes back to a person's father's availability to parent.
I mean, if you don't have a case to support that, I'm not sure that it is a harmless error standard, and that becomes our legal question first. Right. What is there a harmless error standard for this these statutory provisions? If there's no case you can point us to, then it seems like we should be applying the statute strictly. No,
It's so difficult to argue for strict application of a statute in a child protection case when the best interests of the child, you know, overarch everything. I don't think practically that can occur in a case like this when you have an unavailable parent and a child who really doesn't have a strong bond with that parent. We can't strictly follow the statute to the detriment of a child.
Well, I'm not saying that that's what you would have to do, but in terms of the consequence for not following the process in the statute, I think it could mean that, I don't want to say the county would have to start over, but there are certain rights that each parent has, even if they're incarcerated. And to the extent that those are protected in this way by the statute, the county would have to follow that strictly. And at the end of the day, maybe you're right that the outcome is no different, but I'm troubled by the assumption that we would apply harmless error to the without you being able to point me to something requiring that.
Right. And I understand that, Your Honor. And you know, in most cases when something like that happens, you know, maybe it's appropriate to extend the timeline, you know, to attempt to give a father or anyone a more time to work with services that maybe weren't available initially. You know, but in this specific case, it wasn't that father needed more time to comply with services that he didn't know about or that he should have known about if the case plan was offered within 30 days and signed. But yeah, I think Your Honor is correct. It could be a time frame issue. But I think it's very specific to each individual case and has to be directly, you know, looked at in each specific case in a way that's not detrimental to the child. And moving on to Ms. Wimmer's argument regarding mother, I think what it really comes down to for mother was that despite implementing all of the services, she wasn't able to demonstrate insight and change behavior to correct the conditions that led to the out of home placement of her child. Despite her long history of working with the agency and her long history of working with treatment providers due to her chemical dependency, she just wasn't willing to change her life situation and demonstrate sobriety and stability in the community, which essentially came down to her not being willing to separate herself from the people who had an influence over her. So I think I don't want to rehash the district court's very thoroughly written order in this matter. The district court really puts it all on the table and makes the arguments that I want to make here today. So with that, I'd ask the court to affirm the district court's finding of termination of parental rights for both parents. Thank you, Your Honors.
If I may, Judge Larkin, there's still a little bit of time left. Where is the best place to look in the district court's order for the determination of futility? Or is it your position that that was something the district court just didn't address?
Right. It is my position that it's something that the district court didn't stress because the attorneys didn't stress it at trial. And it wasn't something that was rehashed openly at trial. That determination, you know, we knew it was made, but I think the attorneys were more focused on arguing, and not myself, but the other attorneys were focused on arguing reasonable efforts prior to that determination. So I don't think that specific determination and the time frame of before and after that was hashed up by the district court specifically.
All right. Are there any other questions? Then we will hear from counsel for mother and father. Are you going to split the rebuttal time?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
That sounds good. And I can go first. What I would say to your honor, Judge Brian, reasonable efforts are in the statute, specifically two of the statutory bases that the county tried to terminate on father. So absolutely reasonable efforts come into play at trial. It is the county's burden to prove that they provided that, and they did not. They did not go over the case plan with father. They could have. They did not have him sign that case plan. They did not even bother to check really what he was doing in prison. We provided all of that to the district court as to what he was doing. You cannot just write off a parent. The statute is very clear regarding reasonable efforts and what the county's obligation is. And then not only that, it is the county's burden at trial to prove that they provided those efforts, and they did not.
Well, and so, I want to clarify whether father is challenging at trial, whether father challenged the futility decision.
I believe that we did. I believe that we absolutely did.
Because it seems that my review of things that really the challenge was more about the reasonableness of the efforts up until the point of the decision on futility, and not really so much from the decision on futility until trial. And I can understand that you would have a different approach, right? You're saying that they have a duty to provide reasonable efforts. These efforts weren't reasonable. But once the county's been relieved of that duty, I could understand why trial counsel would choose not to challenge that. It seemed like that was the decision made. So is there something you can point me to from the trial that would show after the decision on futility that there was some evidence or some effort to challenge that?
I think that we did that through our testimony as to what Father was doing in prison. What he was doing in prison was evidence of how efforts were not futile. He was sober. He was working on his cognitive behavioral issues. He was in a domestic violence program.
I understand those points.
Sorry.
Do you think then that the proper remedy would be to remand for findings on futility?
I believe that the proper remedy would be to reverse the trial court's decision to terminate and to remand and allow Father to reunify with his son. Thank you.
And could you just identify yourself for the record, the remarks that were just made?
Oh, I'm sorry. Erica Osted for Father John Daly. Thank you.
Thank you. And now, Mother's Attorney, start by identifying yourself, please.
Thank you. Kimberly Wimmer, representing the mother, DRL, in this matter. I would like to go back to Judge Bryan's question to Attorney French, asking about what a parent should do in a situation where a court makes a determination regarding futility and reasonable efforts, and if a parent could file a pretrial appeal. And my position as someone who represents parents on these cases and has for a number of years is it is a very difficult position to be in as a parent. I have attempted not that long ago, probably less than a year ago or close to a year ago, to file a pretrial appeal in that exact situation. And Ms. French filed a motion asking to dismiss the case because it wasn't an appealable issue, which was granted. So I think when you look at timing, you know, a child protection case, it takes, we're about a year and a half into this. And when decisions are made, like the trial court made in August of 2022, that no more reasonable efforts, the county didn't stop providing visits with my client and her child at that point. That was one thing that was taken away as part of that. And that was a question of Judge Larkin's. But now we're here, we're in May, you know, we're creeping up on close to a year later, and this is the first opportunity we get to challenge that decision of the district court. So I just wanted to respond to that argument. The other thing I wanted to mention is Ms. French wrapped up her argument by saying that with respect to mom, her behavior just didn't change. And I would argue that's my whole point to the court here is the county wouldn't know that. The county wouldn't know if my client's behavior changed or not because they just didn't maintain the correct contact with the service providers and the people who were working with her on that change. If you look at the evidence presented at trial, she did change. And we have treatment professionals and the people who she's supposed to be working with as part of that case plan that testified to that. So I dispute that point, and I would ask that the court reverse the district court's decision, remand, and my client get an opportunity to reunify with her child as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Counsel.